dakterel alles wieder sich, lass dann Tristan versinne dich, wie der Sinnen willen kriegt er gehrt wieder Sinn, er gehrt.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews with a local perspective, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson. The show is on Wednesday after calendar and Sunday at 12:30. Well, the dark days have descended upon us. The wind is howling today, or it will be later on, and women are rising up. It's a perfect time to talk with my guest today, Louise Marley. Thank you for coming in today, Louise.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Louise is an author, she's a singer, she's an educator, and she has written a multitude of novels. But today we're going to talk about one, the most recent one, A Secret History of Witches. Isn't that just perfect?
It is. Talk about women rising up.
That's right, women rising up. And Louise also has recently moved to Port Townsend, so we can claim her as one of our own. So Louise, you've written fantasy and science fiction, historical fiction, and you're also known by a number of pseudonyms. And I want to tell our audience that right up front because I want them to find your books. So Kate Campbell is a name that you write under, and those are books, the Benedict Hall books, that are set in Seattle in the 20s, and we'll talk more about that later. And also, this particular book, Secret History of Witches, the name is Louisa Morgan. Am I right that this is the first time that Louisa Morgan has been your pseudonym?
Yes, this is Louisa's debut.
Okay, it's a fine debut and a really handsome book, I must say. So on your website, I noticed that the subtitle was Myth, Music, and Magic. In your latest book, can you tell us about what the inspiration was for writing this story about generations of witches?
I wanted to write about witches and magic. And I love writing historical fiction. My agent and I think that I've established a new genre, which is historical fiction with weird.
Mm-hmm.
As I got into it, this is what so often happens when you write a novel. You start with an idea, or for me, it's always a picture in my mind. And the picture of the opening scene was in my mind. And then everything comes out of that. I didn't know it was going to be a generational novel when I started. But then as I got into the whole idea of power being handed down from mother to daughter, and I have good reasons for that, it just became this growing story. So each daughter, who had another daughter, it was hard to stop, actually, because it just keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the original inspiration. I'm not one of the writers that has a whole story born in my mind all at once. It grows little by little by little.
Well, the story begins in Brittany. It comes alive there, and then it moves to Cornwall. Have you visited these areas?
I've been to Brittany, and especially, and this is why that image was so strong in my mind, in Brittany and near Carnacville, where the first scene takes place, there are standing stones everywhere. Little ones, big ones, some of them are falling down, lots of them are still standing. There are so many that people use them for garden fences, which is interesting to see. And so I toured a place where there was a field of these standing stones, and it's all quite near the water, the ocean. So that was in my mind. Then Cornwall, I have not been to, although I'm going next year, finally see it. But of course, I'm a big fan of Doc Martin, and that all takes place in Cornwall. So I had that in my mind, and I also read Daphne du Maurier did a wonderful autobiographical book about Cornwall, and I just it was wonderful to read, and the descriptions and the details are so lovely. So several of the ideas about the landscape came from Daphne du Maurier. I could do worse, right? If you're going to borrow from the best.
Well, there's a book that our readers can look up, and also the Poldark series.
Yes.
That takes place in Cornwall with the horsemen riding across the cliffs, and Truro is featured in the stories, and also it's a Masterpiece Theater series now. So back to Cornwall. I love it. I haven't been there either, but I look forward to going at some point. So let's talk about these women. You write over a course of 4 generations, 100 years, and it seems to me that the ritual is so interesting, and I'm curious about your research into witchcraft and into practices and ritual. How did you discover that?
The craft that my witches practice is an invention, but it borrows from lots of traditions. The first thing I did was to get everything I could get my hands on to read about witchcraft, and the variety of what shows up is quite stunning. My poor husband came home one day and there was this giant blue book lying on the table, and it was called The Big Blue Book of Witchcraft. And he was like, "What are you doing now?" I mean, you know, all of us writers say if anybody ever looks at our Google searches, we're in big trouble because we look up all kinds of things. So I read both fiction and nonfiction about witchcraft and finally decided that what I really needed was to invent a craft based in a Romani practice that I imagined, because there is actually no extant information about it. But I borrowed from a number of different rituals that do exist, my own Catholic background, which is lots of burning of candles and sprinkling of holy water and burning of herbs in the incense. And borrowing a little bit from Wicca, although Wicca I'm not sure that everyone understands that Wicca is actually a very recent invention. Mm-hmm. It was invented in the mid-20th century by a man named Gardner.
A man. Oh, how interesting.
Yes, I know, but we're going to give him a pass on that. Okay. He couldn't help it. And so the thing I love about Wicca is the wheel of the year, the beautiful, and there are such gorgeous works of art that come out of this. So that's where I got the idea for the sabbats and the minor sabbats. So I had a calendar for the witches to follow. So you can see I sort of amalgamated what I could find and invented the rest.
Yes, because things happen on Samhain.
Yes.
And Yule, of course, we're very familiar with that. And
isn't that interesting? We are so familiar with Yule, but a lot of us never would have thought about Samhain or the other major events that take place around the year. Lammas is one, or something like
that. The Lady Lunasad. True.
Yes, yeah. True. The equinoxes are very important in those things. It was fascinating to do that research because the novel covers so much time from the early 19th century to the mid-20th century, just after World War II, that gave me points at which we could anchor the story. So we weren't completely lost in time. I didn't want to use any dates, but my publisher really, really begged me to put them in so that people knew exactly when we were.
I really appreciated that.
Well, that's good to know.
I kept checking, okay, where are we now and what's going on at this time? So as a person that likes to read historical novels based in some historical fact, that was important to me. So good. I just sort of reiterate that. So this whole book, as we go through the generations and the craft is passed from mother to daughter, we find that not all practices are the same and not all witches are the same. How did you decide and come up with some of your characterizations? They're not all really lovable people.
No, they're not. And nor do I think that they ever should be, nor should they all be perfect, or should any of them be perfect, because perfect people are so boring and they don't make for good fiction. Of course, drama and tension is at the heart of fiction. I felt that women have so many gifts, but they're all different gifts. So one woman might be really, really good at raising children, for example, about just being really patient and wonderful with children. And another woman might be better at running a company. Right. So these are different gifts. The power that these women inherit takes its own form depending on the character of the person who has inherited it. When you have one who has a questionable character, shall we say, then the power can be used in a bad way. I think we all have powers that go neglected. And one of the things that I hope witches can do, and with the rituals that they use to exercise the power, is to bring out the strength that every person has.
So one of your characters really has an affinity for working with the land and animals, and so her power comes through her familiar. And, you know, we often see the witch on the broom with the cat, and we know what a witch's familiar is, but you had a lot of fun with this. Talk about that.
I did. I love the whole idea of familiars. I had a familiar. I had a Scottish Terrier for his whole life, and he was with me like all the time. And I always joked that he was my familiar, but he, in a way, he was. He anchored me. And when I was writing, he used to lie at my feet all the time. And so it probably gave me the idea, and I certainly didn't want the familiars of the Orshiera witches to be all the same. So the black cat is kind of a cliche. It mm-hmm. is a cliche.
And you had a ratty old gray cat
right.
that wasn't very attractive.
Right. Who never got a name.
No.
That poor cat. Yeah, he was. But the familiars in Secret History, every one of them is its own character. So we have that old cat, and then we have a horse. Mm-hmm. And I had never seen anyone use a horse as a familiar. And it's a wonderful Shire stallion. And then his colt then mm-hmm. is also another familiar, which worked really well. And then I wanted something different. So the fox who comes out of the forest and is wild and unpredictable and uncontrollable, very much like the witch who acquires him mm-hmm. and who comes to a tragic end, of course. I shouldn't give things away, but that worked really well for me. I really liked that. And it also gave a way for that witch's daughter to look back and learn something about her mother, something sympathetic.
It seemed like you had a real affinity and knowledge of horses. Is that true in your life?
It is. I grew up riding quarter horses. Mm-hmm. My father kept horses, and we all rode until we grew up. And then I never did again, but one of my sisters always kept horses until just recently. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love horses. I love dogs as well. And so there is one dog.
Yeah, a terrier.
A terrier, you bet. I'm a terrier person. And I love that dog. And she uh-huh. actually reappears in the sequel to this book.
Oh, so you are continuing on a little bit with this vein.
I can't stop.
Well, the book, as I said, it goes through 100 years of history. And at the beginning, you know, it's a time when women didn't really have much of a choice. The men controlled them financially. They controlled who they married and what they did in their lives. And so I felt that you showed the power that a woman can have, that even though it's not sanctioned in society. So you really care about these women and what they're doing. There's a lot of love and a lot of love stories in this book as well. But I wouldn't classify it as a romantic novel. The stories with each woman revolves around her search for love, whether she finds it or not, and her desire to have children, because that's what carries on the mm-hmm. craft. It is important in women's lives, even though they have other powers. Anyway, that's my little part here. Let's talk about genre, and I don't think you can pigeonhole your books, because that's kind of where I was going.
I know, it's very hard for my poor agent trying to sell my work, because there is no specific genre, although these days in publishing, it wasn't true when I started, and we understood I was writing fantasy when my first books came out. With the aid of some very big name authors, like the woman who wrote Handmaid's Tale, Margaret Atwood,
yes.
the genre boundaries are getting very blurry. And we as writers would like to think that we just write books, but of course, people like to buy genres that they recognize. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a marketing thing. It's a way for publishers to be able to target the right audience, because you can write a great book, but if no one knows about it, if no one knows to pick it up, then it won't sell, and then you don't get to write another one. So that's what happens. So we have to have these genres. I think this is historical fiction with weird, as I said, but the publisher chose to market it as a mainstream novel. So that tells you how blurry the genre lines are, because even though these are witches, and even though the magic is real in these books, they're still considering it to be a mainstream novel. And you can see by the production of the book that,
yes.
that it has that look.
Yes. So if you liked Outlander series, you might like to pick up A Secret History of Witches. Or
sure.
Why not?
Good idea.
Yes. So today, you're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson. This is Book Lovers Cafe. We're talking today to Louise Marley. She's the author of A Secret History of Witches, as well as the Benedict Hall series under her pseudonym Kate Campbell. She also writes books about music, such as Mozart's Blood and the Brahms
deception.
Brahms deception. She's also been a singer in her past life, and music is important to her. So tell us about how literature and music intersected in your life and your writing.
My first novels were, which were fantasy novels. They were called The Singers of Nevia, and it was very much a musically based series. And when I was writing that, I thought I was learning a new business. And a mentor of mine, a conductor of mine that I worked with for years, he said, oh, no, it's all the same business. And it really is. It's the same art and it's the same business. The instrument is different. But everything that I learned in my fairly long first career, which was in classical music as a singer, everything that I learned then applied to my new career. Everything about practice, everything about study, everything about being professional at all times, which is something seems obvious, but when you're young and starting out, it's very tempting to sort of fall off that track and do things that are you don't want other people to know about or that you're going to regret later. So it helped me a lot. And also perseverance, which is perhaps the thing that cannot be taught, because it takes a certain kind of character to hang on through the tough times. And every career has them, up times and down times. And I learned in my musical life that the downtimes didn't mean it was over. It just meant it was a downtime. And mm-hmm. then it would turn up once again. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the, that's some of the ways that the musical life it colored the writing life.
I've read on your blog that you are participating in an anthology of alternative truths. Can you tell us a little bit about this publishing project?
Yes. I'll try not to get too deeply into politics, because that's not why people tune in. But a lot of writers in the current climate, much, much better known writers than I am, Stephen King, J.K. Rowling, Margaret Atwood, Joyce Carol Oates, I could go on, are using their platform to speak out about what they think is important. You mentioned the roles of women being controlled, and I was thinking in the 19th century, and I was thinking, boy, how much has that changed? Mm-hmm. It's changed superficially, but we still have a long way to go. So some of my friends, in my colleagues, wanted to turn our talents as writers to the questions of the day, the political questions of the day. And it wasn't I who organized this, but it's a wonderful anthology called Alternative Truths, and it's stories, fictional stories, created out of the resistance. And so was published a few months ago. I can't remember the exact date, but it's available on Amazon and other places. And it's called Alternative Truths. And it's very good. I'm really proud to be part of it. And just a few days ago, a second one was published, which is called More Alternative Truths, Stories from the Resistance. And this one has even bigger names than the first one in it. So it's really worth
it. People are writing.
And it was suggested to me a few months ago that because of my having a book to market and so forth, that I should stop being political in public online. Mm-hmm. And my response is, if we who are writers don't speak out, words are what we have to use and it's what we do best. If we don't speak out, who's going to do it for us? So here I am. I do speak out, and I consider myself a political activist.
Well, the story that is on your website, Relics, is a story that's set in the future or set on it's a science fiction story, but it takes place along a wall. Mm-hmm. And so tell us about, you know, it's wonderful because it's such a great juxtaposition of what's happening yet imagining, you know, a different time and space.
Yeah, it's imagining long-term consequences for decisions that are being made or trying to be made now. That was the story that I wrote for the first Alternative Truth anthology. And I'd like to say it's available for free on my website. You can just go to louisemarley.com. Mm-hmm. And I think it's under the blog section, if I remember correctly. And so please enjoy if you like to read online, because I hope that story is read as a fable. I call it a fable because it's in a not real town, in a not real country. But it's, to me, it's a fable about the symbolism of this wall, and that using a wall to define people's lives and to keep people in or out, it has never worked. It's never been a success. And so that's what inspired the idea of the story. I mean, what do you do now in the Great Wall of China? You just go walk on top of it.
That's right, absolutely. And you've also written another book called The Terrorists of Iristan. Yes. And it also is science fiction, but it has really strong women on a desert planet.
Yes. The Terrorists of Iristan was a novel that came into my mind when Taliban took over in Afghanistan in the late 90s. And I read an article in the New York Times about women, professional women, who were no longer allowed to practice their professions, doctors, lawyers, teachers, and girls were no longer allowed to go out to school. And women were not allowed to walk down the street unless they had a male escort. And it was so brutal, and it upset me so much, coming from the feminist background that I did, that this novel occurred to me. It was my first science fiction novel. Before that, I had written fantasy. I was going to set it on Earth, and it was the time of the fatwa against Salman Rushdie. And so my agent said, no, 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 get thee to another planet. And actually, that worked beautifully, because I was able to create a second world dominated by the perverted principles that had caused Taliban to come to power. And it was a novel that was written 15 years ago, and I'm sorry to say, it's still relevant.
It certainly is.
And it's in a beautiful new edition. Oh. It's been republished by Fairwood Press here in Washington State. So it's The Terrorists of Iristan, if a person is. And that is a Louise Marley book.
So. Okay, we have been talking to Louise Marley, and she's otherwise known as Louisa Morgan, the author of A Secret History of Witches, and also Kate Campbell, Stories About Benedict Hall. Let's quickly mention this. It's set in Seattle, a wealthy family, but also a strong woman is featured in these stories.
You detect a theme there, don't you?
Yeah, well, it's a very important theme.
I am fascinated by medicine. My father was a doctor. My brother-in-law is a doctor. My two sisters are nurses. In Terrorists of Iristan, also, my principal character is essentially a physician, although they don't give her that title, because she's a woman. And so I wanted to write about the 20s just because it's fascinating. And I wanted to write about a young woman physician, and I learned so much. The issues that my character, Margot Benedict, faces in the 1920s in Seattle, in the United States of America, are the same issues we're dealing with today. It's the same thing with women running into prejudice in the workplace, running into issues of their own freedoms in their private lives, issues of abortion and political repression and racism, and all of these things came up in that series. I make it sound kind of boring. I don't think boring.
You do not make it sound boring. I'm inspired by your writing, and no longer will we think of women's fiction as some kind of sidebar to important works of literature where people have something to say. And so thank you again for joining me today. I hope to talk to you again, because you are a resident of our lovely town.
Yes, I'm right up the block.
And that's right. And so thanks again for Louise Morgan, Louisa Morgan, Louise Marley coming by the studio. Thank you to Larry Stein, who is in the booth today. And I'd like to say that the music that you heard today and are hearing today is from Lorena McKennick's Book of Secrets. That's the name of the album. The song's called Mummer's Dance. And also the group Dead Can Dance, a song called Tristan, sung in Old French by the wonderful Lisa Gerard. Join me next time for more about books. I'm your host, Chris Wilson.